I think most of us have experienced that feeling when someone genuinely shows empathy toward us. It's a really special feeling when we get empathetic connection from someone else. It's just magical when another person becomes fully present and tries to really understand what it is that we're experiencing.
So why then, if empathy feels so good, are we not doing it more? Why do we mistakenly jump to defenses rather than seeking to empathize with others first?
Good question.
Think of it. How different would your marriage be? How different would your relationship with your children be? And how different would the world be if we could master just this one skill? This is the conversation we want to have with you here today on Master Your Marriage.
Did you know the average couple waits 6 years to get help in their marriage?
Yeah, that's 6 years of pain, hurt, and frustration.
Hi there, I'm Charlotte Snow.
And I'm Robert Snow.
And welcome to Master Your Marriage,
where we believe that having an amazing marriage should never feel like hard work and shouldn't be a guessing game.
This is the show for married couples who want to discover a scientifically proven approach to building a masterful marriage and have fun while doing it.
So if that's you, you're in the right place. Let's dive in.
Welcome to today's episode. If this is your first time here, welcome. We drop a new episode every week, so click that subscribe button so you'll never miss an episode.
And for those of you who are loyal listeners, thank you so much for supporting this show. You know that we don't gatekeep. Every week here, it's like a free coaching session with us. And for us to be able to continue bringing value each and every week, we really need your continued support by leaving a 5-star review and a comment.
Well, today is a very important topic. We're talking about empathy or empathetic connections. And I just want you to imagine for a moment how different the world could be if we all just got maybe 10% better at empathy. Imagine how it could change. I want you to think about this. Having empathy could increase our tolerance and our understanding. Mm-hmm. It could help us to be more forgiving. It would create greater intimacy. It also would reduce defensiveness and judgment, mm-hmm. would mitigate these biases and racism. It would reduce aggression and certainly reduce violence.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I really just want to hone in on one of those things that you just mentioned.
Just
because
one?
For right now, for this okay. episode, because it's so relatable to us and our friends and our audience out there. And that is this idea that empathy creates more intimacy.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's what everyone wants, right? It's what we hear from most every couple that we work with. We want more intimacy, better connection.
Yeah. How do we get those two? Well, so let's answer the question. How does empathy improve intimacy with our significant others or in our relationships?
Well, when you think about it, Robert, what do you think? What is the most intimate thing that two people can do?
Sex. It's got to be sex.
No. Didn't we talk about this on an episode?
Wait, I missed the question and I was there for the episode.
I think we said intimacy was not the most, or sex was not the most intimate thing two people could do.
Oh, what is it?
Well, I think the most intimate thing that two people can do is to be able to stop everything and truly be present with each other.
Ooh, that's hard.
And with whatever the other person is experiencing, feeling, and needing in the moment. And in nonviolent communication, there's a term for this, and it's called tuning in to what's alive in another person. What's alive in another person?
I think we need to explain that. What alive in us means.
Right. So what's alive in me right now, as I'm sitting here, is whatever it is that I'm feeling and whatever it is that I'm needing in this present moment. So when we talk about connecting with what's alive in someone else, that's what we mean. How can we connect? What do we need to do to connect with what someone else is feeling and needing moment to moment?
Oh. All right.
And to me, that's the most intimate thing that two people can do.
Yeah, because I think it takes a lot of vulnerability to do that.
Yes. Right?
It takes vulnerability to share what's alive in us. I'd say possibly harder for men. Men don't do vulnerability very well. Mm-hmm. Probably because we don't want to be seen as weak and that the world's sort of driven that to us. But that's just broad strokes. And I think sometimes it's equally challenging to be present with someone who's sharing their vulnerabilities with us, right? Think about that. Sometimes it can be uncomfortable to listen to someone else's feelings and their needs. And sometimes it feels a little overwhelming. just to be in the space where we're listening.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we don't like what we hear, right? And sometimes we feel the need to take responsibility for what we hear. So it requires us to learn and tolerate some discomfort so that we can actually attune to one another in that way.
Yeah. And we talked about this on an episode a long time ago, and we talked about meta emotions and just how different people view emotions, their relationship with emotions. And so especially for those who are dismissers, it can be really difficult to sit and be with someone else's emotions.
Yeah.
But again, all of these things said, even though it may be more difficult for men, it may be hard to do these things, it's important because that's what builds intimacy.
Absolutely.
Right. And certainly there's times when it's easy to attune to what's alive in someone else, where we're creating this empathetic connection. It's easy to attune when someone is happy, when they're excited, and when their life is going really well. But then, as you said, Robert, you're right. It can be challenging to empathize with someone who's going through hard things, when life gets hard for them. And yet that's when they need it the most.
Yeah. And in our relationships, empathetic communication is especially important when we're having conflict or when we're struggling.
So important.
Not only that, right? But empathy plays this pivotal role in communication. It's mm-hmm. what enables us to get past the surface level communication so that we can truly understand the emotions and the needs of our partner. And it's what guides us through all of our conflict.
Yes.
Because it's the only way to really manage conflict is actually through using empathy. So yeah. Empathy is super important.
Yeah, it's so important in conflict because, like we've talked about before, with conflict, there's always something deeper that we need to understand, usually core values and dreams, but we can't get there if we don't exercise empathy.
Yeah, and that's sitting with the person and listening, especially when some things are being said is hard.
So before we go any further, I think we need to define empathy of what it is, what it isn't, for our listeners, because I think there's a lot of misconceptions about what it means. So let's define it. First of all, empathy is a basic human need. It's something we all crave, we all want, we all need. And what it is it's trying to understand how someone else feels and what they need, and then letting them know, mostly nonverbally, that we understand. So to get a better understanding of what empathy is, I think it's good if we take a few minutes to talk about what it isn't.
Yeah, or maybe even what it's commonly
mistaken
for. So yeah. First, empathy is not sympathy.
Mm-hmm.
These two are frequently, you know, kind of confounded with one another. Empathy is focusing on the other person, whereas sympathy, in all actuality, puts the focus back on ourselves.
Exactly.
For example, if a person starts to talk about the pain that they're having in their life, a listener may say like, oh, I am so sad that you're going through the suffering. So in this instance, sharing your emotions as the listener is not empathy, right? When we're giving a sympathetic response, we're talking about ourselves. And this takes the focus away from the other person's feelings or needs by sort of bringing the focus to you is how you feel.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think a good maybe metaphor for that, a good way of thinking about it is, did you have a toothache recently?
I have a toothache right now, actually. I think my dentist is listening to these shows, so he'll know.
And if I hadn't brought that up, as you're sitting here focusing intently on the podcast and what you're going to say, did the tooth pain get a little bit better when you're putting your whole focus on something else?
Oh, absolutely. It wasn't until you mentioned it that I started to kind of key into it.
Exactly. So for you out there, if you've ever had a headache, a toothache, but you got so caught up in something else that you maybe forgot your own pain for a minute, maybe you're watching a really good movie and you briefly forgot because you were putting your full attention on that movie. Well, that's kind of like what empathy is. It's putting your full attention on someone else's pain and forgetting your own.
Yeah. And of course, you still might want to and you'll have the opportunity to share that sympathy later.
Right.
And that sadness you feel might be well received later, but only if the person who was in pain received empathy first.
Mm-hmm.
But empathy and sympathy are two different things. And we need to first be empathetic to develop that connection.
Yes.
To confuse and conflate these two things can actually be very painful for someone.
Mm-hmm. So how could it be painful? Let's think of a scenario where it could be painful to conflate sympathy and empathy. Well, I'm sure you've all talked to someone who's grieving, or maybe they've lost their loved one, or maybe they have a chronic disease or an illness or terminal illness.
And you don't even usually know what to say, right?
Right.
And this creates this opportunity to create a problem or maybe even a misunderstanding.
So often when you talk to these people who are suffering, what they'll often tell you is that worse than the pain that they're in, worse than their grief, is the fact that other people can't deal with it.
Yeah.
And so they'll often say things like, you know, I wish people would just be with me. I wish they could just sit with me without having to fix it or give me a solution or give me their sympathy, because really all I need is just for someone to be with me.
It's interesting when you put it that way. I wish someone would just sit with me, which is almost sort of the definition of how to be empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And people are, you know, in these situations, they're well-meaning when they do this. They just don't know how to be present with someone who's suffering, or it's really uncomfortable for them. Yet 9 times out of 10, that's what the person needs the most.
Which reminds me of one of my favorite quotes by Brené Brown,
I love Brené Brown.
To share it and really, like, I want you to really think about this quote, you guys.
Yeah. So Brené Brown says this, quote, "Show me a woman who can sit with a man in real vulnerability, in deep fear, and be with him in it. And I will show you a woman who has done a lot of work. And then show me a man who can sit with a woman in deep struggle and vulnerability and not try to fix it, but just hear her and be with her and hold space for her. And I'll show you a guy who's done a lot of work and a man who doesn't derive his power from controlling and fixing everything." Close quote.
Ooh,
I love
powerful.
That. Yeah.
Who doesn't derive his power from controlling and fixing everything.
Yeah.
So how much of, like, our response to being with someone is really about us versus just being able to sit with someone? That is so powerful.
Yeah.
So empathy doesn't mean sympathy. It just means being capable of identifying and understanding another person's feelings without experiencing them for yourself, without fixing them. Just what is it? Sit with them, what they're feeling in that moment. So what else is empathy not?
Well, as part of the Brené Brown quote, right? Empathy is also not giving advice, like not trying to fix things, right? Very often we think that we are showing understanding when we jump right in and start to give people advice. But again, this is not empathy. It can feel somewhat dismissive and painful when someone opens up and shares their vulnerabilities or fears, only for you, then as a listener, to offer them a quick solution.
Right. So what's another thing? So another thing that empathy is not is it's usually not saying, even though we're trying to convey that we understand, it's usually not saying the words, "I understand," "I understand exactly how you feel." And that's the tricky part, because we want to convey that we're understanding, but we don't want to use the words, "I understand." And, you know, as I thought about this week, you know, we've all heard that saying, try to walk a mile in another man's shoes. And that saying means that we're attempting to leave our perspectives and our biases aside and drop down into their view, right? Their view of the situation from their perspective, whether you agree with it or not. And that switch in perspective can be really helpful for developing empathy. But the truth is that we can't. We can't really walk another mile in another man's shoes.
Yeah. And too often we jump in to use this language when in reality, we don't really understand at all. And that language can, again, feel dismissive or hurtful when the person hears it. So when we practice empathy, we want to avoid using the statement, "I understand." And we're going to talk more about what to say and do instead in just a moment.
Yeah. Another pitfall of empathy is making sure that when we're showing empathy, we're not correcting someone.
Still trying to fix it.
Right. So not correcting.
Yeah.
So let's say your spouse comes in and they've kind of got a misinterpretation of something that happens. And they come in and they say, "I'm really upset with you right now. You had no right to do this thing that you did. And maybe you didn't really do it."
Right.
All right. And so it would be natural to want to quickly correct their interpretation of the situation and tempting to just jump in, state your facts, state your position. But I love this, and write this down, put it in your phone, because I put it in my phone and it in my own notes. And it's that always try to connect before we correct. And this is something, actually a motto that I wish I had known when my kids were little. I wish I had known to connect before correction, even if what they are saying or thinking is totally outlandish.
Yeah. And the reason this is important is because it is the basis of building trust. It's conveying to the person you're talking to, your partner, that they can share whatever is in the life with them, their needs and feelings, and that you will value that before you make any corrections or even any comments. It also conveys that our empathetic connection is more important than being right or setting the record straight or any correction. When our partner begins to trust that our empathetic connection comes first, seeking to understand, it has a massive impact on our relationship. That doesn't mean that after you've developed that seek to connect first, that we won't still work on a correction if it's needed at all, but it just means that the empathetic connection is valued more than correcting the facts or correcting the situation. Often a correction won't even really be needed afterwards.
Yeah. And that reminds me of a quick story that I remember hearing of this mom, and she was trying to correct her child who would never get up in time for school and was always late to school.
Yeah.
And the mom was, you know, hounding the child every morning about being late, being on time, get up earlier. You know, it was correction, correction, correction. And one day she stopped and just decided to try to connect first and got to, you know, trying to understand what was really going on with this child. And the child finally, as she opened up the space for it, said, you know, everything in school is just about the future. It's all about the future. And the mom was like trying to understand, so what's going on? What are you feeling? Well, I'm feeling frustrated. Well, you're feeling frustrated about the fact that you're learning all of these things in school because you don't feel like they apply to you right now. And so they had this conversation where the child then felt heard, understood. The mom went, and then the phone rang. Mom ran to go get a phone call and came back in, and the child was gone off to the bus stop. So like you said, it's like sometimes it's not that we even need the correction. We know, we just need someone to be with us.
Right? Absolutely right.
Good. Okay. Well, that's a good list of things that empathy is not. So maybe we can look now at better how to actually do empathy.
Yeah, we need to do some empathy, right?
Okay. So how do we practice empathy? Well, there's three things, and we're going to dive into them. And these three things that are part of empathy, the first is the hardest. But number one is being present. Two is focusing on the now. And three is focusing on feelings and needs.
So let's just go through these one by one, right? With some examples.
Yeah.
Number one, being present. As Martin Buber, the Israeli philosopher and psychotherapist, says, presence is the most powerful gift one person can give to another.
I love that.
But it's not an easy thing to give presence to others because Buber also says it requires bringing nothing from the past into the present.
Ooh.
This is really hard to do because our thoughts drift and we bring in our experiences from the past and we're using this filter to judge what we're seeing and hearing. But the moment we start to think about what a person is saying and we make all these connections, we lose our presence.
Yeah. So the second component of empathy is to focus on the now.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Empathy takes place in the now. It's what the other person is feeling now. But sometimes someone starts to tell you a story that happened in the past, but we can only connect with them if we can stay present in what's alive in them in this moment now. And so this can be tricky. They might be telling you about an experience last year where they were hurt and they're sharing all of this with you, but that's not what they're feeling right in this moment as they're telling this story.
So the way we deal with that is by connecting with what they're feeling and needing in this moment. And here's the thing. They're probably telling you the story to make an empathetic connection. What they don't realize is that empathy is actually harder to do when we talk about the past versus what we're feeling now. So as a listener, the way that you can stay present and focus on the now is by attuning to what they feel now as a result of what happened to them then.
Exactly. And the way you can bring it to the present is by saying something like, oh, so you're telling me about when your mother left you and how you felt so alone and sad. Am I hearing you express that you're feeling angry at your mother for doing that? Right. So that, what does that do? It's bringing it to what they're feeling now so that you can focus on whatever is alive in them at this moment. And if you use the word anger, maybe it was anger, maybe it wasn't anger, in which case then they'll express to you what it is that they are feeling now.
Which brings us to number three, focus on their feelings and their needs. One of the most powerful ways we can build trust with each other and really rebuild trust after a fracture is by really listening to the feelings and the needs that are alive in each other. And this can be especially challenging after a breach in trust, because what you might be hearing from your partner is a lot of criticism or complaints about what you did to break that trust.
Yeah. So even though your partner might be saying things that sound critical, empathy happens when we can stop ourselves from getting defensive and try to hear the feelings and the needs that are beneath those criticisms. And if you remember from previous episodes, we talked about how judgments and criticisms are really just an expression of an unmet need.
Absolutely. Right? So when you hear criticism from your partner, you have an opportunity to respond in one of two ways. One, we can get defensive, which is likely to escalate into a fight, or two, we can practice emotional regulation and look at that criticism as an unmet need. And we can say something like, help me understand. What do you need right now? Are you feeling maybe scared? Is that because you're needing to feel more emotionally safe, for example?
Yeah. Oh, that's good. All right. So I want to do the role play with you. I don't know if we can pull it off or not, but
I kind of want to demo
this about how criticism can be really just a signal of an unmet need and how we can respond with empathy to a criticism rather than getting defensive. So let's pretend you're coming in from work. I'm going to ask you a question and you're going to get really sharp and nasty back to me. And let's see if I can stop myself from getting defensive.
Okay.
And really seek to understand what's beneath that.
Okay.
Can we do that?
Yep, I can.
Okay. Okay. So, hey, Robert, did you stop and get milk on the way home from work?
No, I had other things to do.
Was
that need me to be more sharp?
Sharper.
Sharper. Okay.
Yes. I want you to throw me back a criticism.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
I got it.
Hey, Robert, did you stop and get milk on the way home from work?
I was busy doing stuff. I'm driving home from work. What'd you do all day?
Okay. That's a little better.
Is that good?
Okay. All right. So let's say you got that. That felt critical, right? A little insulting. How could I take a pause, take a beat, and then seek to try to understand rather than just turning away from him and getting defensive and escalating a fight? So, hey, that was a little sharp. Are you okay? You seem like maybe you're a little agitated.
I'm just a little stressed. I'm busy.
Yeah.
Yeah. You
feeling stressed at work?
Yeah. I mean, work's always stressful. Got a lot of responsibilities around here.
Yeah. So what do you need? How can I help?
I just need some peace. Just want to come home from work without a list of honeydews.
Yeah. So you're feeling what going on at work and you're just feeling really stressed and overwhelmed and you have a need for some peace and maybe some rest tonight.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. Like, let's chill out and watch some movies tonight. Does that sound better?
That sounds like a win.
Okay. All right. So I don't know if that was the best role play, but you get the idea, right? How can we, when we hear a criticism, go to understand the feeling that's really there beneath the criticism and even deeper, what is the need that's there? Is that good?
Yeah.
All right. So let's backtrack. As we said at the beginning, empathy is trying to understand how someone else feels and what they need and then conveying to them mostly non-verbally that we understand.
And because we said that a couple of times about the nonverbal. Remember, what is it? 96%? 98%?
93%.
Oh, 93. I thought I wanted more. 93% of communication is nonverbal. Yeah. So, I mean, you can say, like, I understand, and you can say, tell me more, and you can say all those things. But boy, you got to control the other 93%. And generally, that is what just sitting with someone in their vulnerability looks like.
Yeah. Mostly non-verbally. How do we actually let someone know that we understand what they're feeling, what they're going through without really saying much?
Right. That's what I was saying, right? That's this whole thing. The answer is our body language. Yeah. We put our full attention into someone. We're focused on someone and we're focused on what they're feeling and what their needs. Like, we don't really need to say much. The difficulty is being present.
Yeah.
Some people may want you to say something so that they know that you're listening. In that case, you know, you can validate their feelings. That's enough. But it could be as simple as saying, that's really painful, or one of my favorite ones is that sucks.
Yeah.
But by and large, the other person can feel it when you're present, and very few words are needed when you're really just in tune and generating empathy.
Yes, exactly. And it reminds me of this quick story I'll share of like these couples that were doing this exercise where one partner was sharing what they were feeling and why, and the other partner's job was just to empathize. And with one couple, it was both cases, it was the wife who was expressing a feeling and a need, and the husbands were trying to empathize. And the one husband said, he didn't say anything at all. He was just using his body language, and he was like in it with her, and he was doing a really good job. And then she was like, "Say something, would you?"
Yeah.
She needed a little bit of, you know, that sucks or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas the other couple, now they saw that. And so the husband then was like, he started to say, "Oh, you're feeling sad." And she said, "Shut up, stop it. I don't need any words."
Yeah.
Right. So sometimes it's reading the room
reading your partner a little bit,
but by and large, like you said, it doesn't take much.
So I guess that brings us to maybe our last question. How do we know when you've achieved empathy with the other person?
Good question.
Yeah. Because it usually feels good.
It feels good.
You feel this peace. When a person receives empathy from one another, from each other, not only does a person who receive it feel good, but it's pretty likely that you'll also feel good. There's something really special when somebody in pain receives an empathetic connection.
So this was a big topic, and we actually decided to break this up into two parts.
Yeah.
Because this has already been a long episode. But next week, what I want to do is I want to dive deeper into how to show empathy to people who are really challenging to show empathy to. What are some communication patterns that are really hard?
Yeah.
How can we be empathetic when someone is being cruel to us? You know, what can we do when our partner isn't sharing their feelings and needs? So next week, we're going to even go deeper with empathy and talk about these challenging situations to empathize with.
Yeah. Thank you for being here with us today. If you found today's episode valuable, would you just drop us a 5-star review in the comments and share something that you learned today? Your support helps us as we grow the podcast so that we can make even a bigger impact.
And more importantly, if there's someone in your life that needs help in their relationship and you feel like they would benefit from this episode, would you kindly share it with them?
Remember, as always, be kind to each other this week. Take care of each other. It's the small things done often that make the biggest impact.
Until next time.
Thank you for listening to Master Your Marriage. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, then we want to hear from you. Just go to MasterYourMarriagePodcast.com and send us your question.
Oh, and while you're there, you can also check out our retreats and events and even apply for coaching.
And make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you get advanced notice of when the next episode drops, plus show notes and many extras. Thanks again for tuning in.